Alex Marlowe, and this is the Breitbart News Daily Podcast. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you, and I would be incredibly thankful if you continue to tell 10,000 friends and family members about the new show, hitting subscribe, leaving a five-star review, a nice comment, all that very, very helpful. We got a big one for you today. We will give you the latest on the ongoing Rittenhouse saga. Now the focus has shifted to who is responsible and whether or not they are legally liable for all of the unfair attacks on Kyle Rittenhouse as an individual. And we'll give you the latest on the Waukesha car ramming, which certainly looks like mass murder, though we don't know for sure exactly. And we're getting their slow walking information about the motivations of the killer. Also, new corruption scandals, a lot of these based on exclusive reports at Breitbart News surrounding John Kerry, Jennifer Granholm, and drumroll please, Hunter Biden, and even the big guy, some laptop from Hell Scoops from our own Emma Jo Morris. I get into some of those, plus a bizarre Hunter Biden tattoo of the Finger Lakes, which is very strange. We get into that on the monologue portion as well. A crime wave is through the roof in major cities, mostly run by Democrats, if not all run by Democrats at this point. And the apocalyptic live action role play over the coronavirus pandemic continues into another major holiday with Thanksgiving, with more media outlets demanding or requesting that you behave in insane ways due to the pandemic. And that gets addressed as well. Plus Joe Biden tapping strategic oil reserves in what I believe is a massive self-own, an own goal, if you will, basically admitting his own incompetence by having to dip into our strategic reserves. So all that to come on the show, plus Jim Jordan, who returns to the broadcast first time on the podcast, Republican from Ohio, Freedom Caucus founder, and one of the more popular right-wing fighters in Washington, and we get into a lot of detail about what's going on, what were some of the mistakes that took place over the last few years, and where the Republicans will take the House, and hopefully how they'll address the deep state should they win in November 2022. All of that to come. But first, I want to talk to you about a great sponsor that I really believe in, which is American Hartford Gold. Everyone's noticed now that everything is getting expensive. It's not just gas and groceries. It seems like just about everything. And this is the biggest economic crisis we've seen since 2008, and the government is printing trillions and trillions of dollars. Consumer prices are the highest we've seen in 30 years. Inflation is certainly here to stay. And if the government continues its out-of-control printing and spending, the dollar could continue its free fall and lose its coveted role as the world reserve currency. So how do you protect your money, your retirement, your savings? Well, American Hartford Gold can show you how to hedge your hard-earned savings against inflation by helping you diversify a portion of your portfolio into physical gold and silver. They'll even help move your existing IRA or 401k out of the volatile stock market and into a precious metals IRA. And they make it easy. They're the highest rated firm in the country with an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. And if you call them right now, they'll give you up to $1,500 of free silver on your first qualifying order. So don't wait. Call them now. Call 866-670-7660. That's 866-670-7660 or text Alex to 65532. That's 866-670-7660. 670-7660 or text Alex to 65532. I guess we'll begin with Waukesha, which there's only a couple of updates that I have for you. There were some hearings that were made public, and a lot of the news from yesterday is the media getting dunked on for the way they describe what's going on. The man accused of the deadly Christmas parade crash is how CBS framed it. Calling this a crash is, I think, very disrespectful for the people who certainly appear to have been murdered. It is, of course, a legal thing that will get itself worked out, but certainly how it appears. If you watch the video, and it does appear like the knife fight narrative and the fleeing, that appears to be a hoax also. We don't know for sure, but that is how that appears to be. And so it does look like that this was something that was intentional. And if you see the mugshot that was going around for Daryl E. Brooks, the lone suspect in the case, he definitely looks crazy, evil, or both. I know that opining on a mugshot is not something that is... I'm not sure that's admissible in a court of law, but it is just a clearly it does not look like that this is what the media wants it to be, which is something that was some sort of a car crash. It looks like it does look like that it was from the video. We all know what it looks like. Let's put it that way. Horrible news to report that 8-year-old Jackson Sparks is now the 6th person to have died in the Christmas attack, or apparent attack, I think is a fair way to put it. And so the other victims were all over age 50, which is horrible, but to see an 8-year-old die at a Christmas parade because he got ran over by a freak is very upsetting. And is something that it is incumbent upon us to get to the bottom of it, but just try to understand the media is so dishonest about this stuff that they want to frame this as a crash. They want to frame it as even he was fleeing the scene of another crime. They don't want to frame it as what this appears to be, which it appears to be terrorism. It does. That's how it appears. I'm not saying it is. Might have just been a nutty guy, but we know how it appears. And they are really going out of their way so that we don't talk about it in that way, in that light. So, and we're owed explanations from law enforcement. We are owed explanations from the government. I just wonder what needs to be done for there to be more attention to be paid to this. You know what crossed my mind? I wonder if Trump should go. I wonder if he should show up, talk to the victims' families. Did that cross anyone else's mind? It had to have crossed some of your minds. Demand that we get some more information. Because I'm just afraid this is going to go away. Because if they keep telling us maybe it was a knife fight, and maybe he was fleeing the law and he was in a panic, then we're not going to get to the bottom of this. So just know how much time would be spent on this if the narrative appeared as though it was a white supremacist running into a Black Lives Matter, a peaceful parade. Like, we never stopped talking about it for years. So I'm just afraid we're going to stop talking about this in days. So we'll do our best to keep an eye on it at Breitbart, and we'll have clips and any details that emerge. But again, heartbreaking to add Jackson Sparks, 8 years old, to the list of those deceased. Joe Biden is releasing 50 million barrels of oil from the National Strategic Petroleum Reserve as gas prices keep rising. Now, why do we have the National Strategic Petroleum Reserve? Well, ostensibly, we're supposed to have it in case, you know, the Persian Gulf gets attacked or something. And because some sort of really, really... it's a real last resort because the oil prices, not just prices, but the access to oil around the world gets depleted and or gets interrupted for some unforeseen reason. That's really why we have this. It's not because Joe Biden is feeling the pinch politically because he won't drill. That is not why you tap this thing, Joe. Pretty infuriating, actually, that that's what he's doing. It's a political move to save his own behind. And he was touting it. He was bragging about it as though this was some sort of a genius move, some sort of a really strong move on his part. Let's play at a press conference at which he took no questions. Let's play 1A, Mr. Paul.
To address these issues, I got on the phone with leaders from other countries grappling with this challenge to try to find ways to lower oil prices and ultimately to the price you pay at the pump. So today I'm announcing that the largest ever release from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve to help provide the supply we need as we recover from this pandemic. In addition, I brought together other nations to contribute to the solution. India, Japan,
Korea,
the United Kingdom have agreed to release.
I can't resist. He's trying to blame the pandemic. He stopped drilling. He continues to try to stop drilling. The green lobby and the globalists at Davos are telling him that not drilling is good. That's why the price is the way it is. We can drill our own oil. You're not supposed to have depleted reserves anyway. Again, that is a crisis in and of itself. It is not a crisis, though, that will affect you when you guys all go to the pumps and fill up for, you know, whatever it is. They said, for me, it's been about $100 for my car, for a tank of gas. So him announcing that this is because of the pandemic is just a pure lie. He lies so effortlessly. This has been one of the major themes in the show. It is something that is impressive, even for politicians in an age where politicians are basically liars on 24/7 basis with very few exceptions. It's a that he threw in there because of the pandemic. Wow. I'm tempted to say we deserve better. And then I think, well, I don't know about that anymore. I would like to think we deserve better than this. Go on.
Additional oil from their reserves, and China may do more as well. This coordinated action will help us deal with a lack of supply, which in turn helps ease prices.
All right, so let's continue, because this is just still him trying to make it as though this is not his fault is pretty amusing. So let's keep going. One B, go.
You know, today, though, I want to address another challenge that families are facing, and the one I think they're most focused on right now, high gas prices. This is a problem, not just here in the United States, but around the world. The price of gasoline has reached record levels recently in Europe and in Asia. In France, at the end of last month, it reached about $7 per gallon. In Japan, it's about $5.50 per gallon, the highest it's been in years. Of course, it's always painful when gas prices spike. Today, the price of gas in America on average is $3.40 a gallon. In California, it's much higher. The impact is real. But the fact is, we faced even worse spikes before. Just in the last decade, we saw it in 2012 when the price of gasoline hit $3.90.
Yeah, when you were vice president.
We saw it in 2014 when it hit $3.69. And as recently as 2019, we saw it surpass $3 in many places.
Wow, but that's not what it is now. Now it's much higher than that. So what a fraud. He's citing other countries. I don't care about what the gas costs in Japan, President Joe. I care about what it costs a mile from my house. And the fact that we've had high gas prices before because Obama had a horrible energy policy too is not something that I think proves the point Biden wants to make. Just saying. Again, they lie so effortlessly, it is very much hard to, it's hard to know if he's even aware of this. The press secretary, Jen Psaki, was asked by a CNN reporter, is this being done primarily to stave off a political crisis? Wow, bold question. Jen Psaki's answer is this is being done in order to use every tool at the president's disposal to lower gas prices for the American people. Wow, she's a brilliant woman. Use every tool at the president's disposal to lower gas prices for the American people. All right, now here is the highlight of this group of clips we've got. 1C, Mr. Ball, play it.
There's another issue we'll be addressing as well. Because the fact is, the price of oil was already dropping prior to this announcement, and many suggest in anticipation of the announcement. The price of gasoline in the wholesale market has fallen by about 10% over the last few weeks, but the price of the pump hasn't budged a penny. In other words, gas supply companies are paying less and making a lot more. And they do not seem to be passing that on to the consumers at the pump. In fact, if the gap between wholesale and retail gas prices was in line with past averages, Americans would be paying at least 25 cents less per gallon right now, as I speak. Instead, companies are pocketing the difference as profit. That's unacceptable. And that's why I've asked the Federal Trade Commission consider whether potentially illegal and anti-competitive behavior in the oil and gas industry is causing higher prices for consumers.
Wow.
So we can assure the American people are paying a fair price for their gasoline.
This is unbelievable. Just drill, dude. Just drill. Wow. So you guys are going to pay for an investigation into anti-competitive behavior between all of the oil and gas companies, all of which have high prices. So I guess he's alleging they're all colluding to keep the prices high. And then he goes on to say it has nothing to do with environmental regulations, which is a part of the reason why the drilling has stopped. The thing is that none of this will be discussed in the establishment media. Maybe it will be briefly, but it's just, we just stopped drilling and we're pandering to the environmental movements and the movements that want us to get off of fossil fuels. That is what Joe Biden is all about, is getting people off fossil fuels. He was recommending just, I think also in this press conference, that people drive electric cars. That will be a big help. Driving electric cars will be a big way of getting through this stuff. And him talking about anti-competitive practices is pretty rich when you see what's going on. Yeah, here it is. Americans can save money if they buy electric cars. So electric cars are very expensive, and it's very expensive to get set up to get the electricity into the car. And it's inconvenient unless you live, you know, right by a luxury shopping mall where you can go plug in for an hour at a time. But theoretically, over time, maybe you can save some money doing it. But that's not the answer right now. The answer right now is let us drill. And it's not deplete our strategic oil reserves that are supposed to be used for an actual emergency, not the emergency of Joe Biden's cratering poll numbers. Headline of the day yesterday was the Bidenflation causes Dollar Tree to raise prices to $1.25. So Wendell Huzebo of Breitbart wrote that up. So the Dollar Tree is now the $1.25 tree because of Bidenflation. Isn't that devastating? It's pretty funny. General Mills has prices up 20% on their products. I mentioned Joe Biden's anti-competitive behavior being pretty rich. We've got some big exclusive corruption stories from yesterday. And one of them is from the laptop from hell. You guys might recall we hired Emma Jo Morris as our new political editor. She comes from the New York Post, and she was the reporter who broke all the laptop from hell stories last year. And the laptop from hell has not been fully gone through. And so we have a new laptop from hell report on Hunter. Documents show that Hunter himself was using the family leverage in prospective deal to sell Louisiana natural gas to a Chinese firm. And if you're shocked by that, we reported earlier this week that America losing out to China on access to cobalt hurt America but helped the Biden family and their portfolio. So this shows that this prospective deal for Louisiana natural gas that would have been sold to a Chinese firm would have directly benefited Hunter. We got another creepy Hunter story that Hunter had a shell company named after his deceased mother's birthplace. But the thing that's creepy about it is there's a picture of this tattoo on Hunter's back of the Finger Lakes, which is very, very odd. That is honor of his mother who was born there. But if you see the tattoo, it's very, very weird. It's like a map of the Finger Lakes on his back. Sorry, you do have to see a very intimate Hunter Biden photo if you're curious in that one. He's very odd people, and he still continues to make money off of China and off of Joe Biden and Barack Obama's policies. Just a friendly reminder of that. More big corruption stories we have at Breitbart right now. Joe Biden's energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm, by the way, who does not know how many barrels of U.S. oil are used per day. Doesn't know. We have that clip. Play 3C, Paul. This is pretty rich.
There are various figures about this, so I'm curious if you know, how many barrels of oil does the U.S. consume per day?
I don't have that number in front of me, sorry.
So some suggest it's about 18 million, which would suggest you're releasing less than 3 days' worth of supply from the petroleum reserve.
That's a great question. She doesn't know. It's so good. It's pretty convenient. She doesn't know. So we're releasing 80 million barrels or whatever it is, and you know, how many days is that? No, I'm sorry, 50 million barrels. So we're releasing less than 3 days' worth of oil. Awesome. Really make a difference. But she's under fire, and this is the lead story of Breitbart News right now, because she was promoting this company called Proterra, which is an electric vehicle company. Remember, guys, the solution to the oil prices right now is just to buy an electric car. But the electric vehicle company, she served on the board and held stock in, and has not been forthcoming about this. Big story from Jacob Bliss and Rebecca Mansour, who worked hard on this for us at Breitbart. So there's an ethics complaint pending on this. She's in the executive branch of an electric bus company. She's out on the board, held over $1 million in stock in it. Now she's the energy secretary. And now her policies involve not drilling and involve promotion of electrical vehicles. How's that okay? By the way, Burlingame, California-based company, which is Silicon Valley adjacent, the part of the country that is virtually in charge and not doing a very good job. She finally divested 157 days after she was nominated to the position for $1.6 million. Good pickup there, Jennifer. So this is what we're referring to as Breitbart, the green culture of corruption. Oh, man, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot of corruption going on right now. We had some more corruption with our pal John Kerry. John Kerry, U.S. softens its stance on Uyghur slave labor, even though John Kerry financially benefits from it. Christina Wong wrote this up for us at Breitbart News. The Biden administration climate czar John Kerry drawing scrutiny from Republicans for downplaying and trying to derail legislation against China's use of Uyghur forced labor, from which Kerry and his wife seem to benefit financially. Pretty good, right? So Kerry, who has a vast portfolio, including $1 million in Hill House China Value Fund LP, according to disclosures, which is part of the Hill House Investment Group that is the top shareholder in a Chinese solar panel company that works with companies known to be using forced labor. So he's in a green company, Chinese, uses slave labor, making money off it. Beneficiary. Peter Schweitzer told us that it's his Kerry's financial engagements are real, and his dismissal of Uyghur slave labor is shocking. Peter Schweitzer says that, then he knows pretty bad. It's pretty clear Biden administration is going to give Beijing a free pass on human rights in the name of climate change, which will not be based on a climate change agreement that Peter says correctly is not going to be enforced. So we're getting rolled, everyone. Party of Davos, the globalists. The oil prices soared, by the way, after Biden released the strategic reserve 3 days worth, because maybe it shows to people that they don't really have a serious plan in tackling this and they have no intention to drill, which is the main solution, and to let us have our pipelines back. And Biden instead goes out there and says Americans are starting small businesses at a record rate, trying to find something that he can hang his hat on. Yeah, starting at a record rate because they were all shut down due to the pandemic. No one was starting small businesses last year because of the pandemic. So it's a little dishonest, just a touch dishonest from my vantage point. And if Kamala Harris gets in, though, we could be able to right the ship, because her intellect, her brilliance is so amazing. You stand in awe of her grace, her beauty, her intellect. Let's play 2A, Mr. Paul.
Prices have gone up, and families and individuals are dealing with the realities that bread costs more, that gas costs more.
Wow, the reality is that bread costs more and gas costs more. She's deep. How confident will you guys feel when she becomes the president, which seems to be kind of likely? I mean, how is Joe going to make it all the way at this point? If his solutions to gas prices are through the roof is to blame the gas companies, tap 3 days worth of strategic oil reserve he really should not be tapping, and then encourage us all to buy electric vehicles, many of which you can't even get now because you can't get anything, because of the supply chain issues that he's not helping with. And it makes you think, maybe we'll make it all the way. Maybe we will get President Camelia. All right. I will do a quick Rittenhouse update, because that's the hottest stuff. You guys want the Rittenhouse content. Look at the numbers of Breitbart. It's pretty much what people want the most. The White House still defending their claim that Rittenhouse was a white supremacist, though of course he was not. Joel Pollack's got a big article at Breitbart suggesting Jen Psaki could be sued for defamation. I encourage all the lawsuits, anything to push back, need to make example of all these frauds. And Mark Levin was making the case on television yesterday that Joe Biden is definitely someone who could be in the line of fire for a lawsuit as well. A couple other quick headlines worth noting. New York City Democrats preparing to give voting rights to nearly 1 million non-citizens. I just did a huge interview with Victor Davis Hanson, which we will have for you after we prepare it, edit it down, both on video and on the show. And he was talking about how this is, he's a book out called Dying Citizen, and we discuss what it means to be a citizen versus a resident. And this is part of the left strategy, is to make residents of the United States the equivalent of being a citizen. And one of the last distinctions between a citizen and a resident that we've had is the right to vote, which the left is trying to change that as well, because we're seeing it in California in local elections. And now in New York City, we are seeing the New York City Council wanting to give non-citizens the right to vote in local elections there. So when Jay Leno joked, 20 years ago, whatever it was, that it was undocumented Democrats, it is no longer a joke. That is literally what illegal aliens have become in our country. Big crime spree that has taking place in our blue cities that are kind of burning themselves to the ground. Our media will not make the connection that these are all Democrat-run cities. That is the commonality with almost all these things. Some of the latest crime spreads in Los Angeles, at least 20 suspects attacked in Nordstrom. We reported on the dozens and dozens of people in San Francisco, smash and grabbing, brazen robberies, mall looting in the Bay Area, 50 people wielding hammers, traumatizing Best Buy employees, Louis Vuitton and Saks ransacked in Beverly Hills. Gavin Newsom, who is mostly known for eating in high-end restaurants and spending money on solar panels, doesn't have a good solution out there. So, but lots of smash and grab of luxury retail brands, and why wouldn't it be? I mean, this is what, as someone who was living adjacent to D.C. and pretty close to the Georgetown area, which is one of the upper scale areas in D.C. during the Black Lives Matter riots of last summer, you get used to the fact that you can live in a city in the United States where you're boarded up. You're boarded up, and the media just does not seem to care that this is a clear sign that our society is eroding before our eyes. That you walk down a street and you see boards everywhere instead of open shops of people thriving. Whether or not, I'm anti-materialism, but you should be able to shop. So it's all happening. And the common factor, Democrat-run cities. Did you know there's a conservative advocacy and benefits organization with more than 2 million members and counting? AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC has become one of the most significant conservative organizations in America. Joining AMAC gives you access to money-saving benefits, cutting-edge news, and a magazine full of insightful takes on today's most important issues. But most importantly, AMAC is working tirelessly to preserve the freedom secured by our Constitution. With a full-time presence on Capitol Hill, AMAC is pushing back against the efforts to defund our police, weaken our borders, and replace your freedom with government controls. Stand with me and over 2 million patriots by joining right now at amac.us/Breitbart. That's amac.us/Breitbart. The benefits are great, but the cause is greater. Join AMAC today. Join amac.us/Breitbart. Let's get into it with Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio. Roll it, Paul. Congressman, it is not an easy time to be a conservative in the swamp right now. Everything that is done is scrutinized very high level from our establishment media, and your counterparts on the left basically are able to get away with just about anything. This is something that you have to deal with on a constant basis. So you wrote a book to set the record straight on a bunch of things. Tell me about what prompted you to write it, and what are some of the key issues that you think are really not getting a fair shake in our establishment media right now?
Yeah, thanks, Alex. And you're right. In fact, I say this in the book, you don't get a fair shake from the mainstream press. I tell my colleagues all the time, particularly guys in the Freedom Caucus, I say, if the press isn't saying something bad about you, you ain't doing anything any good. That's just the nature of the business today. They're going to lie about it. So, I wrote the book. It's about the title. I think we make the job too complicated. What did you tell the voters you were going to do when you put your name on the ballot and you ran for the office? If, in fact, they elect you, go do what you told them you were going to do. And there's only been about, in the history of this great country, about 12,000 people who've had the opportunity and the privilege to serve in the United States Congress. You might as well do what you said. You might as well fight for the things you're supposed to and that the folks back home elected you to do. So I write about that. I think your listeners will enjoy it. I try to take them behind the scenes, talk about the big investigation. Seems like I've been involved in just about the IRS investigation. I was on the Benghazi Select Committee, and of course, I spent a lot of time on the impeachment where the left came after President Trump in a totally unfair fashion, totally wrong, no due process for the president, and talk a lot about that. And then also the formation of the Freedom Caucus, how we started and what we're trying to do. So again, it's a hopefully behind the scenes look that the reader gets. It's a quick read. I think they'll enjoy it. And I spent a lot of time with I felt privileged to have just a number of interactions with President Trump, who did more what he said he would do than any president that certainly in my lifetime.
So one of the chapters I think is really important, I think resonates with a lot of the audience, is when is someone going to jail? This is a constant refrain that we get from our audience, which is that they're trying to put the right in jail for obeying the law, and the left seems to consistently undermine our laws and use the laws to target conservatives, and it seems like there's never any question. Never any consequences. Yeah. You go through the IRS targeting, the Benghazi tragedy, and of course the Trump Russia hoax. All these are crystal clear examples of where you would love to see Republicans get some people at least to stand trial.
Yeah. No, look, and I try to do everything I can to get this, but all you can do from the legislative branch is get the facts out there, is to have the hearings, do the investigations, do the cross-examination you need to do in committee so the truth gets out there. In the end, the Justice Department's got they're the ones who have to prosecute people if that's warranted. Let's hope Mr. Durham is on that trail. It seems to be that he is, with the recent indictment of Mr. Danchenko and of course, Mr. Zussman. Let's hope that's the case, because we now know, like you and I knew way back when, but now the whole world knows, and Mr. Durham is saying this, that it went right to the Clinton campaign, and this was all a joke from the get-go. So, let's hope that happens. It used to be the number one question I got. I think I relate in the book that one time this guy at the airport walked up to me, and I come walking out of the restroom. He's a big old guy with a cowboy hat, and he come walking up to me, and I look at him. I'm like, oh, because I mean, most of the time, like, people come up to you, they're positive. But every once in a while, you get someone to start screaming at you, yelling, "Hey, some crazy liberal!" And this guy walked up to me, he just leaned down, and goes, "When is someone going to jail?" And it's a real attitude, as you point out, Alex, that American people have, because they're sick of this double standard. They're sick of if you're part of the elite liberal class in D.C., you get a different treatment than us regular folks. And they know it's not supposed to work that way. It's supposed to be equal treatment under the law.
One thing, you have another chapter that's important on the groundwork that President Trump laid. I think this is a really important discussion in the book, but also beyond the book, because you guys are in the driver's seat on the Republican side to take back the House and the Senate in 2022. And then the pressure is going to be on to do some good. And I think pretty much in terms of the issues, there is a big consensus behind the issues that the Freedom Caucus as well, but Donald Trump was really all about. And I think this is important, the groundwork. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, no, you're right. President Trump saw that we had to have a border. You're not really a country if you don't have a border. He understood that the illegal immigration issue was a huge issue, and the American people get it. And what a contrast between what he did. We went from border security, a border that was secure, to complete chaos now in just 10 months of Democrats running the government. So he saw that issue. He saw fighting for America, putting America interests first. He saw standing up to our, first president to stand up to China and say, "No, we're not going to tolerate these crazy trade deals you're doing and stealing our intellectual property, and we're going to use tariffs if we need to use those to get their attention." So I think in so many ways, President Trump saw where the American people are, and stood strong for those positions. And what a great 4 years we had. And we had it. I really talk about this in the book a lot too. He did so much in spite of everyone in that town being against him. Every yeah. Democrat was against him. Everyone in the mainstream press was against him. Everyone in the bureaucracy was against him. And a bunch of Republicans were against him. And he still got done more of what he said he would do than anyone present, certainly, as I said before, certainly in our lifetime, maybe ever.
So one of the things that you're known for is you are someone who has a contempt for, I would say, the deep state, for lack of a better expression, maybe the administrative state, the permanent political and bureaucratic class in Washington. A lot of this comes through in the impeachment chapter. But what is it that needs to be done? And is there a path for Republicans to deal with some of this? Because this is another theme that is just the faith in the key institutions in this country have been so undermined over really the last, I would say this goes back to Obama. It even kind of predates Trump, but really the last 15 years have been just brutal to the credibility of these institutions.
Alex, when was Dr. Fauci's name ever on a ballot? When did he ever go out and talk to we the people, put his name on a ballot and run for office? I am so sick of these people who don't stand and directly accountable to we the people on an election, on a ballot, that haven't so much influence. That's the problem. We have to speak out against and stop this, the power of the bureaucracy. How about General Milley? Did he ever run for office? But certainly what he said, if in fact he said this, and it sure seems like he did to his Chinese counterpart, if he made that statement, that is not a statement that he's supposed to make. Only those kind of statements can come from the commander in chief, the president, who puts his name on the ballot. So this is something that drives me. Lois Lerner never put her name on a ballot, but she sure went after a bunch of Americans with a whole new scheme that they concocted. This be on the lookout list. How about what Merrick Garland's doing? He got confirmed by the Senate, but his name was never on a ballot. And he is targeting parents as we speak for simply going to school board meetings and speaking out against this crazy critical race theory curriculum. So that is such a big problem in our system. And we have to get back to where the people, whoever they are, if they run for office and they win, those are the ones under our constitutional system who make decisions. And this idea that bureaucrats do is just flat out wrong. So, yeah, it's a huge problem. I talk about that in the book as well.
Garland is a perfect example of someone to focus on because he's someone who basically, I think, got the attorney general spot as like a booby prize because Obama tried to put him on the Supreme Court and McConnell held the line on that. And so Garland didn't get on. And we've learned that Garland is not a particularly bright individual. And not to say he's particularly stupid either, but he just is. He's not a commanding presence. He's, you know, used to managing a small staff as a judge. And now he's running one of the biggest bureaucracies in the country. Yeah. And he's clearly out of his grasp of what he can do. And I do feel like he's gotten co-opted by this deep state culture. Everyone in Washington I've ever talked to about Garland says he's a nice guy. And he's doing some of the most radical policies we've ever seen.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think this is a part of the swamp. This is the swamp culture. This is what it does to people.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. Think about this. In 24 days, we went on September 29th, a letter from a left-wing political organization to the President of the United States. And then we go 5 days later, we have the Attorney General of the United States doing exactly what that left-wing political organization wanted. Then on October 20th, we learned because of a whistleblower coming forward to our office, because of a whistleblower, we learned that there was the counterterrorism division sending out information, an email to special agents in charge around the country, FBI agents around the country, saying treat parents with put this label on this domestic this terrorist tag, this threat tag label on parents. And then the very next day he testifies to us and says that, we're not treating parents as domestic terrorists. There was just one problem with that statement. The day before you sent out an email saying you were and actually doing that. And then, of course, the following day, the 22nd of October, what does the School Board Association do? They, because of the politics is so bad, they apologize and withdraw their letter. But the attorney general continues to do it, which tells me one thing. I don't think this, Alex, started with the School Board Association. I think it started with the White House and the Justice Department. And I think they used that letter as a pretext to do what they wanted to do, namely go after moms and dads. The letter is actually – think of it this way. The letter is like the dossier. The FBI knew the dossier was garbage. But they wanted to go after the Trump campaign. They wanted to spy on Carter Page in the Trump campaign. So the dossier became, here's our reason to go to the FISA court to do what we already wanted to do. The same thing happened with this letter because we know before the letter was even sent on September 29th, we know the School Board Association was talking with the White House, figuring out how they were going to do it. So this is the scariest part because it's using government, it's weaponizing government to go after your political enemies. And that's what the White House and the Garland Justice Department did. And that's what makes it even more sick that they're treating parents this way.
One thing that is really interesting, is that in your chapter on the Obamacare repeal, one of the real villains here is Paul Ryan. This is something that I know will hit close to home for Breitbart, for the Breitbart audience, who's not been a huge supporter of his and his vision. And I think there's a reason why he's not in Congress. That is, it's something that is worth a long discussion, but I want to get your thoughts on this section and why you chose to focus on this, because I think it's very, very compelling.
It was such a big fight when President Trump, when we first gets elected and we have Congress, we should have repealed it on January 20th, 2017. In fact, frankly, that's what we told the voters we were going to do. But Paul Ryan comes in with a completely different plan involving three buckets. And it was literally the craziest strategy I've ever seen. And it didn't work. And it was just the wrong thing to do because it wasn't consistent with what we told the voters we were going to do. And of course, we got in the middle of all this. And look, now, Paul's he's a smart guy. He's a nice fella and did, I think, a fine job as Ways and Means Chairman. But he, as Speaker, his plan of going after things just didn't make sense, and it certainly didn't with the repeal of Obamacare. And unfortunately, we didn't get it done. I think because we started off with such a goofy plan, we should have just repealed it on day one with the very same bill that we had passed in the previous Congress that Obama had vetoed. For goodness sake. But we couldn't do something that simple, that basic. We had this crazy three-part plan.
And let me plug the book again, Congressman Jim Jordan, Do What You Said You Would Do, Fighting for Freedom in the Swamp. I think the legacy of this, and we don't need to talk about Paul Ryan's character and if he's a good guy. It's totally irrelevant. The point is, though, is that a lot of faith was put in him to guide us through this thing that was one of the key reasons Trump got in, among many reasons, but a lot of people hated Obamacare, the signature plan that Barack Obama brought. Mm-hmm. I would have probably started with immigration or infrastructure if I was the Speaker of the House at the time, but I wasn't. He wanted to do the Obamacare repeal, and it fails, and it's very time consuming, and President Trump blows all this political capital that could have been spent on other stuff. I think that really hampered the whole administration, and it's so unfortunate, and it's very important that we have a history documenting that.
Yeah, no. I thank you. We could have started with tax cuts too, because we got that done, and that was great for the economy, great for the country.
And everyone on the right would agree. It would have been totally unifying on the right to start there.
Yeah. And we could have started with Obamacare repeal if we'd have done it right. If we'd have done the bill we all agreed on just a few months before. But the problem is, it wasn't done right.
Okay, so let's talk about where do we go from this point, because the draining of the swamp, which I think you understand very, very well, is going to be, we're very tough at Breitbart, but we understand it's not going to happen overnight. Is there a path? Is there a plan? I know it's going to start with winning in 2022, but from there, what is the plan? Because this is one of the biggest threats to the Republic right now is the deep state.
Yeah, I think two things. I think we are going to win it back. When we win it back, we won't be able to change law because, it'll still be President Biden. But we can have fights on key issues and have a chance to win on some of these key issues. I think two that come to mind is we should have a fight on the wall on immigration with the Biden administration. We should try to get that in an appropriations bill in the big spending package that happens every year in Congress. We have to fund the government. So that is one issue we can focus on, or we can focus on defunding, or I wouldn't say defunding, but holding the Justice Department accountable. And typically that involves money that goes to the Justice Department because we appropriate the funds. In light of what they've done, I mean, in light of what they're doing to parents, for goodness sake, in light of how political they've become on suing the state of Georgia for fixing their election laws down there, for goodness sake. So that I think those two areas jump to mind right now as something that we could focus on as a Republican conference, as Republicans who I think are going to be in control of both the House and Senate after the midterm elections next year.
All right. The book is Do What You Said You Would Do by Jim Jordan, Congressman from Ohio. And Congressman, I guess the last question I've got for today, and I've got many more, but I want to be respectful of your time. I'm sure you're busy. Book's out yesterday, so I'm sure it's around the clock promo for you. Why is it that so many people who get sent to Washington don't do what they said they would do? There's obviously this is going to be a a long answer, but it's, what is it? What happens between the campaign trail and showing up where so many people just lose sight of what is important?
Yeah, it's just easier. It's just easier to go along. You get there and there are always a million reasons why you can't do what you said you were going to do and what you were elected to do. Some of it comes from you know, and from the press. I mean, you won't get lied about in the press if you don't, you know, push back against the swamp. So if you take on the bureaucracy, if you take on the interest in D.C., you're going to get the press fired up and come after you. And we know how the press works today. I mean, not Breitbart, but we know how the mainstream left wing press works. They just make it up. It's all made up. I tell one story, I think, in the book where I was talking with President Trump. This is back during the Mueller investigation. And in the course of our conversation, I said, "Mr. President, you know, I know what I get. I know how, you know, MSNBC and CNN and these places lie about me." I said, "But you get it 1,000 times worse, and you get it every stinking second of every stinking day." And there was a little pause, and the president goes, "Well, Jim, what are you going to do? Go over in the corner, get in a fetal position, start sucking your thumb?" He goes, "We got to fight back." And I laughed and he laughed. But it's like, that's the only attitude you can have, particularly today, Alex, when the left is so radical and wants to fundamentally change this country and has us on this march, this accelerated march to communism. We have to fight back. There is no getting along with the radical left who control the Democrat Party today, because they want to take the country in a completely different direction. They don't like what our country stands for, and that's why it's so important. And you have to have people in government, in Congress now, who are willing to do what they said and fight the left.
As always, we like to feature a call of the day from our vast SiriusXM audience to the live show, which is at 6 a.m. every morning on the SXM app and on 125, the Patriot Channel. And today we go to Wisconsin, fittingly, where Mike, caller Mike, connects some dots between the lack of law and order by local and state officials in Wisconsin and how that could lead to some of the crises like what we saw in Kenosha and now what we're seeing in Waukesha. I think he makes some pretty good points, connecting a lot of dots, and you'll hear right now.
Number one, and this is in relation to Kenosha. I live in Franklin, Wisconsin, which is about 15 miles north of Kenosha. You have Kenosha County, you have Racine County, and then Waukee County, and Franklin is in the southern portion of Waukee County, about 15 minutes from Kenosha. All this could have been avoided on August 23rd, 24th, and 25th. The people of the state of Wisconsin were begging our Governor Tony Evers, to bring out the National Guard to protect the citizens and the people at home business and small business in downtown Kenosha. We did not want Kenosha to turn into Portland, Oregon. And he refused to do anything at that time. Because why? Donald Trump was the president. He didn't want to make him look good. So this was all about politics. That all could have been avoided. That's point number one. Point number two, what happened in Waukesha County, 15 minutes from my house, downtown Waukesha. You know, the fake news media has to finally start phoning up and taking some responsibility here. Not all white people are racist. And this 39-year-old punk was let out on bail, which that's another story in itself, shouldn't have been done. But here's a guy that hates whites, considers all white supremacy. He took a vehicle, sped 40 to 50, 60 miles per hour downtown Waukesha, just hitting people and killing people because we're all white supremacists. When is the fake news networks, when is the communist news networks, CNN, going to take some responsibility for how they report and what they report? And then last but not least, today it was reported, and I was watching a local conservative news station before I came to work. I'm driving to work right now. And in the first 10 months of office, Joe Biden took office on January 20th. We have more fentanyl crossing our border. Border policy, and more people have died since January 20 up until now. And what's being done about it? And you know what? I blame the Democrats and their policies, the Democrats, what I call them. They're not Christian. They're anti-American. They're Marxist socialists who don't give a damn about Americans, care more about illegals than they do actual American citizens. And those are my comments today, and you can comment on them, and I'll listen to you, sir. God bless you, and thank you very, very much for what you do and getting the word out.
I got American parts.
All right, that'll do it for today. Thanks so much to Paul D'Amelio, our producer, pulling double duty today as Greg Evan gets a day off. Robert Marlowe helps me select topics. And thanks to all of you for telling 10,000 friends and family members about the new podcast. Tell them over Thanksgiving that they can get the show. They don't need a SiriusXM subscription to get the podcast. Appreciate that very much. AlexMarlowe.com for all for all my socials. Breaking the News, my best-selling book, is available also by audiobook if you would prefer it that way. And most importantly, enjoy yourself this holiday. Don't let Dr. Fauci-Stein ruin your time. No reason for it. Don't listen to him. It's not credible. All right, we'll see you on Friday.